Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is sponsored by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. We have gotten way more than 2 months. We're 2 months. We're like 18 months on it. Absolutely love it. Today's guest, Colleen Sullivan, CEO of CMT Digital. I don't even know where to start on the show. This is a Scott show. Not a Scott show in the way that the David Faraday show is a Scott show. That's a different type of Scott show. This is a show about crypto, blockchain, where things are going. There's a splash of application. There's a splash of like, well, what if we live in a world where gambling is taking place at high volume, where esports is the future? It is the future, but people don't seem to want to recognize it. I don't know. What does that mean? I'll tell you. Colleen will tell you. It is our infrastructure, not just financial, but for the purpose of this show, financial, is outdated. It doesn't work. It will not work in the future. It does not work in the way that we need it to work in order for the future to come to be the way we think it's going to be. So the conversation with this show is going to go all over the place, but it's a fantastic way to perhaps better understand why cryptos exist, who invests in them, why, what they're looking for, not just trading currency, but investing in the companies that build the technology that you know as currency. And maybe the most important part of this is just understanding that all of the big financial players in the world have a very, very, very serious eye on this. It's not going away, folks. It's just really not even, it hasn't even begun, to be totally honest. This is the prequel. Another show you might like if you dig this show is going to be Kraken CCO Bobby Zagata. He was on a couple weeks ago. Kraken is the most secure, largest Bitcoin exchange in the world. They happen to live in Chicago. So if you like this one, you will love that one. If you like that one, you will love, love, love this one. This is my conversation with Colleen Sullivan, the CEO of CMT Digital. I don't know if there's a better way to start this conversation than to just say, as of recording right now, Bitcoin and Ethereum, they are at 10,000 and 282.77 respectively. Moving quickly, we're like rolling back into this kind of like, hey, where's this going to go thing?
Yeah.
And that is bits and pieces of the things that you guys are involved in. But I think it is an interesting segue for a lot of the folks that were it's so funny. The investors that were real, and like, I don't know, I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but like real investors, like this was something that they professionally did. They seem to be the last ones to the crypto craze and were sort of like skeptically looking like, where's the bubble? And all of the people who have nothing to do with like, oh my God, free money. And they were all throwing it into it. And we're just now getting to where those people are switching. All the people who put their money in early took it all out and then it crashed. And then they didn't buy it back because they saw it crash, and now they lose out on all the gains. And all the actual like savvy financial investors are now like racing into the space. Where do you guys fall, aside from your investments and everything else? Like, just you. Like, what are your thoughts on the crypto market right now, and just like how the evolution has gone?
Yeah. So I think if you go back to 2017, right, in the mania that we saw,
yes.
You had a lot of retail people, you know, just all over the space. And I think part of that shows the hunger for retail people to participate in
yes.
our capital markets. And, you know, the SEC is making a push to change the accredited investor laws.
Yep.
But retail people have largely been excluded from our capital markets. And now when you have companies waiting even longer to go public, you know, all that value is accruing to private large investors.
Yep.
By the time the companies go public, a lot of that value has already been, you know, it's already
sucked
been
up
taken.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so funny you say that's a great way to phrase this, because obviously on my Saturday show at WGN, we talk a lot about early stage investing. It's for retail investors. It's equity crowdfunding. So the companies that come on are pitching are equity crowdfunding, and the regular Joes and Janes can invest in these companies. And I think that I've said this a bunch of times. I think that the crypto craze in really 16, 17, and then even the down and back up is the number one reason why Title III has really made a difference and like finally come to the top. Because before that, I would try to explain to people on stage that they can invest in early stage companies. And you do the whole like, you know, only rich people used to be able to invest. It was only the top like 2% could invest in these. And they'd be like, okay, like that didn't make any difference to them. They're like,
yeah.
Well, that's great. Why would I invest in a startup? They had no knowledge of like the whole ramification. And the way that you phrased it actually is like literally perfect. I couldn't say it better, because right now you're seeing startup companies IPO later, and just high growth companies in general IPO later. And you look at the Facebooks and the Twitters of the past, they IPO'd, did okay, and then it's been just this huge, you know, skyrocket. We're looking at an example staying in the markets, Robinhood app.
Yeah.
They're filing for an IPO sometime in the next, you know, within 2020. They're already, like, their last round was at like $8.5 billion. So they're going to IPO at like $10 billion.
Yep.
I mean, other than, like, I don't want to get into the whole stock there, but like TD Ameritrade and all the big giants that are standing outside are just like drooling, waiting for them to come out so they can treat them to the real business environment that's not the safe private version. But is there a lot of room for that company to be? Are they a $20 billion, $40 billion company?
Right.
I don't know.
Yep.
You know, and but like who benefited from that? It's not you who invests in the IPO.
That's right.
It's those people who put it in at like $3 billion, $1 billion, you know, $100 million.
That's totally it. And so I think crypto gave people the exposure to
the... And the insight. They learned that that's a thing.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think, you know, that's what we saw in 2017. And then we saw the whole thing kind of crash. And where we sit in this process is as a prop trading firm, you know, we're trading our own capital. We're not trading third-party capital.
Yep.
And that's why I think you've seen a lot of the proprietary trading firms in Chicago in particular be early entrants to the space. We can take that risk.
Yep.
We can take risk with new technologies, with a new asset class. But the bigger, you know, institutions that are managing third-party capital can't.
Correct.
And, you know, it's partly because the regulatory environment. So there's still a lot of ambiguity and things that need to be cleared up. Infrastructure. We're still building out all of this infrastructure and the tech to support the trading. So there's a lot of frictions. And
It's funny. For a while, hedge fund was like the thing. Everyone's in hedge fund, and it was like quant, and there's all these different versions. And now everyone I talk to in hedge fund is like crying. They're just the sappiest people.
It's a tough market.
It is. It's so hard because it's like, well, how many more divisible algorithms can I create to like fine tune this margin down to a 0.12 decimals
and
later?
There's like, not much edge. There's not much edge right now, right?
Except for in this, because it's your money. It's your proprietary edge. It's the fact that, and we'll get in, I want to get into your thoughts on this also, on like what crypto is to an investor and what retail people should be looking at it like, because there's a lot of, you know, this is the good and the bad in this whole thing is that like all of the attention is thrown on this. And it's not just crypto, it's the attention in investing.
Yep.
Like you should be in charge of your money. We have the ability to have self-directed investing unlike ever before. There's more access to information. You don't have to have a Bloomberg terminal. Like there's a million things that can give you as close to the pro trader's edge as possible without being quite on the, literally on the instantaneous trade. But the downside, and maybe we needed this, the downside of it is when you have a bunch of bartenders taking to Twitter and talking about how they made $1 billion overnight and then they lost it the next night, they think that they're like pro and nuanced and they just start throwing people, they take other people's money and they're telling other people to invest, and you have this like sort of influencer network of things. And I personally think that that whole thing, while it's great because it shed the light, it's also part of why we watched Tesla over the last month go through the roof, because you get all these people who had an opinion that never did before.
Yep.
And that's like, but like, it's a new, I feel like it's a new market. It's like a wild west.
Well, I mean, you think about it, you know, what Bitcoin did, right? And I always look back at the timing of it, right? So October 31st, 2008, what's going on in the world? We've got the white paper is issued maybe 3 weeks after Lehman Brothers fails.
Yep.
The House and Senate had just approved a $700 billion rescue plan of the financial sector. And at the same time, you've got this increasing, you know, centralization of the internet. You've got Facebook, Google. Now you've got these, you know, business models built on monetizing user data. So it's a very interesting, you know, kind of convergence of events.
It really is.
And then you think about, you know, so what came out of that? Well, through Bitcoin, we now have this opportunity to build economics directly into the internet. We've got a new kind of money. And we've also got a way to sort of deal with this issue of these institutions that we thought that were too big to fail, failing.
Yep.
You know, have this money that's not issued by any government. No one can take it from you. You can't confiscate it. It's uncensorable.
It's almost like the perfect storm of things that had to happen for even, whether it's a person, an institution, the Satoshi thing's a whole nother, we won't get into that.
Yeah.
But like, for the opportunity for someone to step out and go, have you thought of this?
That's right.
Because you would have been laughed out. I mean, they were laughed out of the room then, but you would have absolutely been laughed out of the room. It wouldn't have even been a thought.
Well, and when's the last time you thought about what is money, right? 76 years ago with Bretton Woods. And now,
I mean, I think about it every day when I come home. But yeah.
No, me too.
Well, that's with where like is the money. That's where is the money. Yeah. Not what is. I know what it is. Where it is. I don't know where the hell
exactly. Went. No, but it's we're sort of rethinking all of that. So, you know, when you say like, how should retail people think about this, or how should people think about this, you know, new asset class generally? You know, I sort of view it as a hedge against things getting strange with our global monetary system, or an insurance policy. It's like a call option, right? Like, I don't know where things are going to go globally. And this is a way to have, you know, just uncorrelated exposure.
Yeah.
And we've got strange things happening. You know, you think about, you know, we've never had a digital form of money like this. So like today, almost all international transactions have to go through the U.S. banking system in some way, shape or form. Well, that doesn't necessarily need to be that way anymore. So like when China issues the digital yuan, those transactions aren't going to go through SWIFT. They're going to go through the rails that China's building for them to go through. So it's almost like a digital component to the physical Belt and Road. And, you know, and then you kind of go down that rabbit hole, and it's like, okay, how do economic sanctions work if transactions don't have to go through the U.S. financial system? You know, can these countries start to trade with each other outside of the U.S. dollar? What happens if the U.S. dollar is the global reserve? Like, there's just a lot of things happening.
Like, I want to crack into that a little bit, because, and this also starts to lean into the whole blockchain technology and the importance, because we're having a conversation. This is perfect timing for this. Gambling and bookmaking is about to become legal in Illinois. It is in several states, but Pritzker said it's probably going to come by March Madness, coincidentally. good timing. It's not opened up to like the FanDuels and the DraftKings of the world for 18 months, and there's a big booty that they got to pay to come in here. But what is happening is you're starting to see these large markets open up to gambling, open up to cannabis, open up to esports. And the reality is our current, like, as a side business, and I know obviously Vegas is a completely different thing. As a side business where not everybody is gambling, it works. Like, I can call bookie, make a bet, owe the guy or get my legs broken, you know, pay the house, whatever it is. I can do that, and I'm not running so many bets simultaneously that I have to worry about, like, well, when the Bears lose, I get paid, and then I have another bet outgoing, but I can track it. It's like my full-time job for the most part. When you get into the future where gambling is ubiquitous, betting is ubiquitous, people are placing bets left, right, and forward, all of a sudden, our currency doesn't work so well, and there's no realization of cash after the close of the game. Where'd the money go? How long do I have to wait? Whose bank is holding it? Who gets that interest? I won the bet. Why am I not? There's a million things. If you don't have instantaneous transactions that are also, and oh, by the way, there's a trust factor. I don't know who the hell you are. I'm gambling with my hard-earned money. I don't know who you are. What does it mean? Like, did I win? You said I won. Like, we just had even FanDuel just had a deal with a guy who was faking and won the $1 million and he had been cheating. It's like, that could all be resolved with digital contract, that as soon as the game is over, the money is immediately in my wallet and I can place bets all across the world all simultaneously. And that same thing goes in the esports world, which is like, people think it's like forever from now. It's like a couple of years from now, we're going to be looking at...
They don't have kids.
They don't have...
they think it's forever
correct.
From now. Yeah.
Or the kids are so old that they haven't thought about it.
That's
like,
right.
Everyone who's in it now, that is a bigger up-and-coming sport than is the games you're watching on TV on the field now.
It's massive.
And all of the transactions that are happening during those games happen in real time, or they wouldn't have... There's no point.
Yep.
So like, our infrastructure is just outdated. Yeah. For the way that we're going to live our lives.
Yeah. So you raised so many great points there. So the way I like to think about it is, you know, the internet sort of brought us this internet of information where we can transact information simultaneously all around the world, right? So, you know, in the next like 5 seconds, I can FaceTime a friend in Singapore. Yep. I can play Fortnite with 99 other people, and millions of other people around the world are playing their own instance of the game. But I can't click on a button in my browser and buy a New York Times article for 10 cents instantly, or send more than a nominal amount of money. You know, I think domestic wires are 24 hours and international are up to 5 days. And that's what this technology changes, to your point, on instant settlement. And so what we see happening with Bitcoin, like, In November, we had a $1 billion transfer of Bitcoin settled in 10 minutes for $3.89, right?
Yeah.
And to your point, that's about to happen with transfers of all forms of value. And that's what this changes. So you can, you know, these new economies sort of start to come to the forefront. And I think, you know, esports, gaming, you know, I think in 2018, Fortnite did like $2.4 billion in revenue.
Yep.
And 69% of Fortnite users buy in-game assets, skins and emotes, even though they don't own them.
Yep.
Epic Games owns all that stuff. Yep. And this technology transforms that. Now, all of a sudden, you can hold those assets in your digital wallet.
Yep.
You can trade them. Right? I mean, it's about to get pretty
and then
exciting.
That opens up the whole global market.
Yep.
And that's a whole other thing, and that's a lot more money. And the part about this, correct me if I'm wrong, is this is I was told, we had, I think it was the CCO of Kraken was on, and we were talking about the, how do I explain this to people in a way that they understand it? Most people look at investing in crypto like they would equities, and it's not. It's a currency. And if I were to try to explain it to you, I'll give you my take on it and you tell me where it's different, because I think most people are just scrambling. I look at it like, when I try to explain this to someone, I look at this in the sense that if I were doing business in Tokyo, I would use this. If I were in India, I would use this. If I was in the US, I'd use this. If I was a global business, I'd use whatever, US or Euro, whatever you are. There's a reason, right? It's familiarity, it's locality, it's whatever. In a global economy, where everyone is everywhere at every time, and people who live in China might be working for a US, a Chicago company. They're a Chicago company, but they're just in China. There's a million ways this goes. It's not about the location anymore. It's about the business you're in. What is the transaction like? What is the actual contract flow, transaction volume? What is it, micro? Is it major? Is it slow? You know, what are the things? There are certain cryptocurrencies and tokens that are best aligned to certain types of business transaction. And there might be a baseline one that's converted as a trade op for Ethereum versus whatever, name your random thing.
Yeah.
Is that somewhat on target?
Yeah. I mean, so from like a macro level, I think about investing in operating companies in the space, and then I think about investing in the assets themselves.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about investing in the assets themselves, I mean, I think of Bitcoin as a form of money, a digital gold, if you will. Ethereum is a smart contracting platform. So that's going to enable all kinds of things in that area. If you think about, you know, Ripple, sort of a settlements platform.
I want Ripple to just explode.
I know.
I'm waiting.
Well, Tezos, that's exploding right now.
Yes, it is.
That one really took off. It's been interesting to kind of see these alts rise as we're seeing Bitcoin rise. But I agree with you, because you have to look at what the underlying technology enables.
Yep.
But we still don't have like good valuation metrics, like how to really analyze, you know, how do you value?
There's just no history that's like sustainable.
It's all new. Yeah,
right?
It's totally unprecedented. Like, we can compare it to some other stuff, but it's not one for one. So I agree with that way of thinking about it.
Then there's the other piece, which is the technology. CMT Digital is actually involved in this part. This is looking at the tech and looking at what we'd invest in and why. What is your glimpse into that world? What are people? I feel like I'm very cautious around that part, because I feel like I blew people's mind on the just like trying to figure out that this is a thing, and then you get into this and everyone's like, what?
Yeah. So let's see. So CMT Digital, we're involved in three different areas. So like, we started in this space in 2013, really from a legal and regulatory standpoint. You know, the firm had always traded in regulated products and regulated markets. And when I said that I thought we should invest in Bitcoin, they were like, I don't know, we've got a reputation, we care about a lot, and it's ironic our lawyers telling us to go into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Didn't go over very well.
That should have been like the safest pitch of all time, right? Because it's like, if the lawyer's okay with it, then I mean, you know.
I know, right? But they were good, like, with us getting involved on the legal reg side, and we did a ton of that work. So that's still like a big component of what we do. And then through that, we, you know, invested in Bitcoin, and then we launched a crypto trading desk. So we trade globally on crypto spot and derivatives exchanges. And then in the fall of 2017, we started investing in the space on a venture basis. So we now have, well, as of the end of this week, it'll be 26 portfolio companies.
Awesome.
And So, and those are all operating companies. So they're not token deals. Yep. You know, that it's all just, it's just regular venture. You know, the firm definitely has a strong belief just in you know, investing in innovation generally.
Yep.
And the firm has also been, I would say that there's a mindset of running toward change running away from it.
This is a conversation I want to get into with you on this, because you are, I mean, this is right on the line, like literally of like, some people think this isn't a thing. Those people are going to lose. And it's not because I'm trying to be arrogant or techie. It's just a fact. Like, you just look at, like I said before, the infrastructure doesn't work. The way the pace we're going, it just, it doesn't work. Yeah. And so it's not about cutting jobs. And I was like, oh, you're using technology to get rid of, you know, to lower costs. No, that's,
I feel like we're creating,
creating a ton of jobs and a ton of areas that you have to go to school and learn. Like, there's so, this is so good on so many levels. Yeah. Will there be hardships? Yes, obviously, with anything, but we are in this weird, this isn't just political. This is the whole, I don't even think it's just US. It could be, I'm not a global person, so I don't want to speak for other areas, but I just get this feeling talking to businesses that for whatever reason, 3 or 4 years ago, if I were to talk about crazy innovation, things that are going to be like mind blowing, people are like, dude, awesome, like leaning into it. Now I'm feeling resistance all the time. And I don't get it. Like, when is it not good to lean into the curve?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, where we see this the most is on the regulatory side.
I get that, because this is them losing their power a little bit. Well, I get that.
Yes. So, a couple of things to unpack there, too. So, you know, Facebook kind of started off like a firestorm on the reg side. So, the end of June, they announced Libra, this new crypto asset. Well. You know, yeah.
swimmingly.
Yeah. And they've changed what they're going to do with it now. Now it sounds like it's going to be like a one-for-one backed stable coin. So like just backed by US dollars. In the beginning, it was this basket, right, of fiat currencies. And to your point,
I loved the idea, by the way, as a complete side tangent. I didn't think that I didn't even put an opinion on whether I thought it would succeed or not, because these are all things that are like, I don't think you should be given a check mark because it didn't succeed in an area where we have no precedence.
Yep.
But I thought the idea was very interesting, and in that, albeit ambitious, this could be gigantic. And if there was someone who had the connection to every single person and could digitally lock us all together, it'd be the guy who's got billions and billions of people online.
Yeah, he's like the unelected president of the largest country in the world, right? 2.4 billion.
Maybe that's why it doesn't.
Well, that's exactly it. To your point on fear, I mean, that's what it is. So I think to a certain extent, the way governments maintain control over their people is through controlling the monetary supply.
It's a good place
to
start.
And with Libra, you don't control it anymore, right? You've got a private company that's controlling this asset. What goes in the reserve, what the reserve invests in.
Like, which is scary, too. I mean, not, I don't mean because of the obvious stuff, but like, that is, I mean, we're just, it's so crazy. We're just getting in this place right now in this country and the world, really, where there's almost things are too fat. Like, this, I'll give you an analogy that you will totally get, and most of the listeners will get. Even a couple of years ago, you would talk about, like, if I were to start your new company, going to hire a CMO. 5 years ago, borderline, anything between 2013 and the rest of history, you're going to find somebody who's an old ad exec, and they've got a great charisma, and they know colors, and they're just so fun and cool, and they come up with great ideas to sell. Today, it's a technologist. The CMO is a digital native, a complete technologist, a complete nerd. It is a CTO junior. It's actually now really called the chief growth officer, and they're really kind of like a CEO / operator. They're really not, there's like a CEO's got the vision depending if they're technical. And then, you know, it's a really different role. And I feel like that's what we have going on in the government and in all these businesses. You've got these people running companies that don't have a technical understanding of where things are going. And it's getting very dangerous.
Yeah, it's fear. And so there's a lot of educating that needs to happen. Yeah. I feel like, you know, we still spend a tremendous amount of time just educating regulators and policymakers so that they're not afraid of the technology. Yeah. And instead, you know, and where it gets tricky here to the comment you made about kind of not pushing things forward, not leaning into innovation, that has been, and there's of course exceptions, right, to the general rule, but the attitude from regulators, policymakers has been to really like put the brakes on this. Like, we're scared of it. You know, how do we stop it? Whereas you go to other jurisdictions like Singapore, Switzerland.
All in.
That's it. You know, how do we make this work?
That's the opportunity to knock down the U.S., right? I mean, that's the opportunity to say you guys were the king and now you're not.
No, and that's exactly what we see. And what we're seeing is, I mean, we've invested in an exchange in the Middle East. Yep. We've invested in an exchange in the Philippines. We see, you know, and often when we're on calls with teams outside of the U.S., it's U.S. people on those calls who have left.
I totally believe
because,
that.
Because, you know, when you're building in a new space, you need to know the rules of the road.
Yeah.
People generally are not violating our rules because they want to. It's because they're not clear.
Correct.
They don't have a roadmap.
Well, it wasn't designed for you to be able to do this.
That's right.
Essentially.
Yeah, no. And so, and that's the other part, right? We have an intentionally very slow moving regulatory system. I mean, the founders built our country that way, so it's hard to change laws.
It's definitely a death by a thousand cuts. Yeah. They just figure you're going to go rolling down this road slowly and every single state and city and jurisdiction is going to take a slice.
Yeah, no, and that's what we're seeing. and that's why, you know, on the positive side, Chris Giancarlo, who's the former head of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, he just started the Digital Dollar Foundation to kind of push the Fed and you know, other groups in the United States to think about, you know, putting together a digital dollar so we can stay competitive with other jurisdictions that are already doing that. I mean, China should have the digital yuan issued, you know, this first
It'll
half
be soon.
Of the year.
If it weren't for, if we didn't have coronavirus,
And it's going to be interesting to see how that impacts a lot of development over there. And Giancarlo makes the argument, and I think it's sound, that you know, if you have to choose between using a digital yuan and a digital dollar, you know, China doesn't have the best track record in terms of how it surveils people and their transactions, the social scoring. Here, we've got implied rights to privacy in the Constitution.
Yep.
And you want to get the right people thinking about a digital dollar that are going to think about embedding privacy and how that's going to look. And how does, you know, because with cash, right, you can't really unmask transactions. Yeah. You can't track it. There's a lot of consideration that needs to go into this. But the sooner we start thinking about it, you know, and figuring out what rules do we need in place? What kind of jurisprudence? How do we put all this together?
And therein lies the Libra dilemma.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, but I think we're going to end up with a lot of this, right? You're going to have, you know, stable coins that are backed by fiat, stable coins that are backed by other crypto assets, stable coins that are backed by commodities. You're going to have companies issuing their own tokens.
That was my next piece. Yeah. I would love to know, as you lead this company, you literally are charting your own path. I mean, you have to be. And I have had this conversation with Ken at Republic, the crowdfunding partner that we have, and they have a coin that they've created that is not tradable right now, called a note. And the idea there is basically, if you're buying in on the note is backed by all of the percentages of equities that they have of all the startups that have raised on their platform. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, like, presumably if a company owned, let's just say 100%, 2% at a time of whatever, it ends up being close to 1,000 companies, and there's at least two or three unicorns in there, and there's a handful of other ones that are really good. The value is up and down all the time. It depends on when they go public or if they're at, you know, the exit, whatever. but you can't trade those commodities in all these different companies.
Yep.
But you can trade the note, which owns a certain percentage of all of those companies. And that's like the beginning, that's retail, but that's the beginning of this trend of, it's like, well, why wouldn't I just create my own token and be able to? I mean, you look at like Carta, which is tracking for back office. You look at a company that's saying, you know, listen, angels, you don't have to have 52 versions of your docs. You can just run it through here. We'll monitor and send out all of your quarterlies and blah, blah, blah. Why would I only take this one rich old white dude's money when I could take money from everybody?
Yep.
Like, it's not even hard to argue, and yet it's like you're standing at the podium at City Hall or at the White House screaming, and this is like the most obvious thing on the planet.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I do think that's where we're going.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
It just won't be here. If they don't really get on board, it just will be across the street.
And that's the frustrating part, right?
Yeah.
It's super frustrating because, you know, going back to the internet, if we hadn't... if we had stifled that through putting onerous regulation on it, we wouldn't have participated in it like we did from a standard setting, economic, I mean, pretty much every standpoint. And I, you know, our view is that this technology has similar potential, if not more, than the internet, because you're essentially rebuilding the internet from the ground up with these new rails so you can transact not only information, but value. So, but yeah, you know, and we see a world where you've got content creators issuing their own tokens. Yeah. So, yeah, it's, yeah.
I think my only thing I think that is kind of catches me in this is like the internet. We were almost fortunate that the people who were running the country at the time were old and stupid. And not that they're not old and stupid now, but like they had no financial back in that. They didn't know the industry. They don't care. Their great, 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 great grandfather didn't have a seat on the board of trade. Like they had, it had no impact. I was like, oh, it's a bunch of young kids in the, well, actually it was in Wisconsin, but they like started this whole thing out. Like, what do we care?
Yeah.
This is like, whoa, it's you're money. In my front yard.
And again, you know.
And they're still slow and stupid.
Well, you make a great point, though, because at least with the internet, you're kind of running right into First Amendment freedom of speech, right? Yep. Constitutionally protected rights to share information. With this, it's the exact opposite. You're running into money, like the most regulated thing out there. So it's a very different, you know, you sort of had to take a hands-off approach with one. And with this one, I mean, everybody is on top of it.
Yeah, 100%. So, okay, so we go back to CMT, and I want to see how the next couple of years, like, what are the things you guys are going to be looking for? What are the signals that people should be paying attention to? Because you have the ability to be one of the first movers, as at least in the U.S., as this is, like, panning out. What are the things that are most important for you guys to be able to be in this long run?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into sort of playing the long game with this.
I mean, you talk about a part of it already, which is like the on the regulation side. Like it's hugely important. We saw this in the cannabis space. As cannabis was starting to become a thing that people were really going to allow, you see a lot of folks that were working in law firms or whatever who were specializing in the regulation side. And then after about 2 years, 3 years into it, now it's legal in Illinois. But like for the years in it, at launch, almost all the people I know who were working at law firms at that time now are running cannabis companies. They're the only ones who know the landscape.
Yeah.
So you have that. That's a huge advantage.
Yeah, no. So, and we'll continue to fight that fight on the regulatory side. You know, the trading side, it's been interesting. And part of it to me is a game of survival. So, you know, we had a really large team in place in 2017 and 2018. We were staffed 24/7. We had reopened offices in Tokyo and Seoul. And then throughout 18, when it became obvious that the environment was changing and it wasn't great for trading, we had to make some really hard decisions in terms of cutting the team, which is really hard to do, but, you know, it allows you to stay in the game. So there's that component, kind of like, you know, taking the 23 years of CMT's experience just operating businesses and trading and applying them to what we do in this space.
Yep.
And so, like, decisions like that, I want to be around when things get good again. So you got to make some tough cuts in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's also, I think, really, I don't know, it's, you're just going to, if everything plays out as predicted, which it won't, but, like, you know, close enough, you have such a, you are at the ground level. There's so many people who, like, if you look back on history, it's like the ones who were fortunate enough to be on the ground level for some of these things.
Yeah.
They just, you can't replace that.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a, you know, so like, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, my view, to me, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Every day, I'm thankful for it. It's a privilege to be a part of it. And I couldn't be more excited. I mean, I think it's going to be one of the most exciting things that we've done at CMT. And, you know, the ability to work day in and day out with the founders who we've invested in is just remarkable. You know, and you take Jack Mallers, who's the founder of a company called Zap based here in Chicago, and he's working with the Lightning Network. So if you think about Bitcoin today, you know, it's slow. It's not slow in terms of our traditional payments network, but it's slow in terms of, you know, transactions take 10 minutes to settle. Sometimes they can take longer because of on-chain activity. So for it to have instant payments, that's not that great, right? Yeah. We need that technology to scale. And the problem with decentralized blockchains is that it's sort of like, if you think about, in order to send an email, you had to download every email you ever sent in order to send the next one.
Yep.
That's how decentralized consensus works. Yeah. So we need that to scale. And that's what the Lightning Network does. So it's kind of like, just like the internet was built with, you know, different layers of the stack.
It's like a zip file.
It's exactly it. And so the Lightning Network is kind of the second layer. And, you know, Jack is probably one of, I don't know, maybe five people in the world that are experts at this technology, like at the level he's at. And that makes it pretty exciting, you know, to come
into the office.
Just to have
insight and, with a person like that is crazy.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And to see what he's building and to see where this technology is going to take us.
I want to bring Jack to a holiday party.
He's amazing.
We should just bring him like our family Thanksgiving, like all the aunts and uncles are sitting around talking about some waste of time stuff. And just like, you want to blow your mind?
Yeah.
Go ahead, give it to him, Jack.
Absolutely. You know, and Jack's the range of things that he's looking at is really remarkable. So he's got the Zap wallet, and then he's got another product called Strike, which is really cool. But then he also, just given his family's background in the financial services space in Chicago, he has also been spending time on, you know, what derivatives do we need specific to this industry? Like one of the biggest risk for miners is changes in difficulty.
Yep.
And so Jack has been working on difficulty swaps. He's also been thinking about transaction fee derivatives. So very cool stuff.
Yeah. It's like we're going to have Technori Malta pretty soon. I feel like that's where we're heading with this. This has been really fascinating. How do people sort of get involved and learn more from you guys and follow you and support the work that you're doing on the regulation side, those that are maybe interested in learning how to work with you? Because I feel like there's still, Chicago is going to be, it already kind of is, but it's going to be a mecca on the fintech side as we get into the crypto and everything else, because the infrastructure's here.
Yeah.
And the financial focused education, you know, like Northwestern and Chicago and others are here. And there's a lot of traders who this is one of those things we talk about this all the time on this show and others, like, are entrepreneurs born or trained or whatever? And I'm sort of, sometimes I can argue one or the other. I cannot make that argument about traders. You are either a trader at birth and you are swapping like your little chew toy for new food. Like, you're a trader day one. You cannot raise that. And we have a whole city full of them.
Yes.
And they're very hungry to do some deals.
Yeah.
And crypto is here, and that's not going anywhere. So there's a lot of people who probably want to work with you guys. Where do people go?
Yeah. Well, you can find us. We've got a website. It's cmt.digital. You can always email, text, whatever. Yep. We're around. You know, I'll make a really quick plug just for
plug
women
away.
In the space. You know, I feel like women who are already in the space need to be intentional about bringing other females into the space. And we've tried to do that. You know, the beauty of this technology is there's so many different aspects of it. There's the legal regulatory. Yep. There's the actual tech component. There's economics. It really runs the gamut. So you may, if you're interested in the space, like, there's a place for you.
Yep.
And the more females that get involved at this early stage, you know, the more of a voice you have in how this technology is developed and implemented. So
I think that's fantastic. Two, I actually think that this is one of the big pendulum swings towards women in finance, women in tech, women in a lot of things. Because this is one of those things where it's about time. So it's not about, like, are you a boy or are you a girl?
Yeah, totally.
It's not, where are you from? It's not, it's like, did you come up with something that makes this move faster? Yeah. You did? Fantastic.
Right,
you're hired. Like, and it's a place where many, many, especially if you're on the side of, like, you know, you're actually truing the transactions, if you're on Bitcoin or whatever it is, you might be in your basement. You might, who the hell knows where you are?
Yeah.
You're working in this. So there's a lot of swings in culture and things. And I think, I hope that this is an opportunity where a lot of the female technologists that I know really come to the forefront and just, like, kick the guys' asses and just be like, all right, well, the trading floor was yours for however long, and that's the bye-bye.
I'm not going to argue that. I started on the trading floor, so it's kind of funny to...
I was going to go down that path with you, and I was like, I've had two... Between Christy Ross and a few others that I've had on the show who spent their time on the trading floor, I think we know the story.
No, I'm more
Let's
than
keep
happy
it positive.
To, yeah, skip over that one. But yeah, I mean, there's just so much opportunity in this space, and we're so early still.
Yep.
I mean, so early.
Yep. This is awesome. I really appreciate you coming
in. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Fun.
If you've got questions for me or for Colleen, feel free to DM me on Instagram or Twitter at Technori or at Katoon to invest in featured startups on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio, Saturdays from noon to 1. Go to technori.com. Boom, that's a wrap.